Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
5 at 5 brought to you every day by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Hey, if you'd like to tweet us, at 960 The Ref, yours truly, at Jeff Dantzler TV, and Adam, you got to say it, Cobra Kai.
At 42 Cobras. Bring it on.
And again, how you got to that?
Well, it's a simple story. I just misheard a friend of mine talking about a website he was working on, and I thought he said 42 Cobras, and I was like, that is the greatest website name I've ever heard. And he was like, no, I didn't say that. I said, what did you say? And he said something a lot less exciting.
Right.
So I was like, you know what? That's fine, but I'm taking it.
That's a great name. Well, I told you this is the story that the 10,000 Maniacs, I love, with Natalie Merchant, they got their name. There was some B-horror movie back in like the 60s called 1,000 Maniacs. Oh, that's pretty cool, but we'll just call it 10,000 Maniacs. That sounds better and scarier.
Yeah. One of my favorite, I never actually have heard these guys play, but one of my favorite names for an indie rock band was Somebody Still Loves You, Boris Yeltsin.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought that was just
Boris
a great
Yeltsin.
Name.
Yes.
Bringing out the old Russian politics for an indie band.
Somebody Still Loves You, Boris Yeltsin. That's a great name for a band there. All right, well, real quick before we get into the 5 at 5, our man Cliff, he's right there with us, Adam. You were cutting grass at 1 o'clock. Emily and I were out for a chat. Our buddy Cliff, who listens in every day, said strolling down Millage. Hey, he's getting in shape for Rush. You know,
sure,
listen,
yeah.
It's just around the corner. Okay. Strolling down Millage, listening to us. Who's better, Georgia's D-line or Notre Dame's O-line peeking ahead? That's going to be a huge battle. The Irish have projected two first-rounders. And, Adam, we can do this later in the week or later today if we want. But I just got online and went through their roster, their numbers from the low 60s to the low 70s, there were 9 straight guys they had on their roster that were over 300 pounds. Like 8 of them were on the O-line, 1 on the D-line, or 7-2. That is going to be a
massive.
That's going to be a classic big old Midwestern powerhouse, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, just big old powerful offensive line.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, that region of the country, they're always, talk about the talent down here. We may have some of the skill positions better. We may have a lot of things better. But that's one thing I think the Midwest, they're always going to have.
They're
going to have those
big
linemen. Ones.
I have to say, and obviously, listen, like we say, when it comes to recruiting, dominate this state. Like I say, in a 25-man class, get 20 of the best guys from the state, 3, 4, 5 elite out-of-staters. My buddy Dr. Fred Riefstack, good friend of mine, team doctor for the University of Georgia. He's from Illinois. He had a great idea. And I think this could be a thing. It's like, boy, and this is now Kirby's obviously got it cranking with the O-line class. And to a degree, now Owen Condon, one of the verbal commits for this year, his mother went to Georgia, but he's from Oklahoma, which is not in the upper Midwest. But bear with me here. Big Ten country. Basically, Dr. Riefstack said, you know what we ought to do is try and go out and get a really good lineman from the Midwest. I'm not talking about a reach. I'm talking about a really good player from Illinois, Ohio, something like that. I'm talking about a 4 or 5-star guy. Of course, everybody wants to do that. And then, you know, it kind of become a thing. It's like,
pipeline.
Hey, we're getting 3 or 4 of the best offensive linemen in Georgia every year, and we're going upper Midwest to get a big old boy who wants to get out of those winters and come down south. And then, you know, if a couple of those guys hit, that really could become a deal. And some guy from Michigan or Ohio say, you know what, tell you what, old Athens, Georgia down there, you know, they've got this little train of Midwestern O-linemen going down there. Just a thought.
That's a great idea.
Just
I love it.
Just a thought.
First question for today's 5 at 5. We're going to continue talking about Georgia football because we love talking about
Georgia
football.
Well, we talk about it every day.
This question here, if we can answer this question, I think we would settle all of Georgia fans' anticipation and woes for the recruiting trail this coming year. So we're just going to throw it out there. What must the Dogs do to secure a commitment from Justin Fields?
Well, I think with Fields, I don't know if there's a flat win total, but I think we need to have that feeling that this team, if Georgia doesn't win a championship this year, that we're right on the verge and he could be that missing piece. Now, you know, obviously, you know, we don't need to go out there and go 4-8. You know, certainly beating Tech, well, good. That's essential for every, that's essential for life to continue
yes,
on Earth.
Yes, it is.
I mean, come on. Yeah, we got to beat Tech. A win over Tech and a win over Florida. You know, if Georgia were to get to 10 plus, let's just say 10 plus and get to Atlanta, boy, you could really feel the train coming. Because the thing is, too, this is a great class coming in. And with, again, this next class for 18 is not going to be rated as highly.
Right.
But that offensive line is going to get stacked even more. And with Zamir White leading the charge, if Georgia gets Jamari Salyer and Justin Fields, maybe Tyreek Johnson, it's a chance to get four five-star guys, elites. And then that class for 19 really sets up. And I'll ask you, I'll throw it back at you. You know, he knows Zamir White's coming in. He knows
sure.
he'll have Harriet and Swift. Most of all, he knows that offensive line with Thomas and Wilson and Johnson and Schaefer and hopefully Salyer. Those guys are going to be up front to protect him. And he's got to have an eye on those two five-star receivers who committed for 2019.
Absolutely. That was one of the things I saw when we started getting those guys in. I mean, as a quarterback, you want to know you're throwing a good target. You want to know that you're going to have somebody who's going to make you look good. Because, I mean, quarterbacks and receivers, they go hand in hand. If you
sure.
don't have quality receiving, your numbers are not going to be as good. And if your quarterbacks aren't as good, your receivers aren't going to look as good. I mean, that's one of the things we talked about. The only reason Calvin Johnson looked as good as he did is because he was excellent. He was great.
Yeah, oh, he was a freak of nature.
And he had a terrible quarterback throwing to him. I mean, he made Reggie Ball look passable.
Thank God.
And, yeah, absolutely. Because if he had an even decent quarterback over there in Atlanta, who knows what he could have done with his
college career. Well, here's the other thing. You know, and Calvin, you know, listen, he was the second pick in the draft. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He grew up a Tech fan, which is fine. It's demented, but it's fine.
It happens.
But you think he could have come here and played with David Green, DJ Shockley, and Matthew Stafford?
Ugh.
He's a guy, too. I've said there are two guys in the 2000s. Now, Deshaun Watson, it's a different animal now, so that would be three. That if we would have gotten, we win a national championship. Like Ronnie Brown, you put him on that 2002 team, 02, 03, and 04. And Calvin Johnson.
Yeah.
And well, Calvin would have won a Heisman with one of those quarterbacks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that 02 team, honestly, they were only one game away from winning a national championship anyway.
Average back.
Yeah. You win in Jacksonville, you're going to be playing for the national championship.
Well, I mean, with Ronnie Brown, we would have blown the doors off some teams. Some close games would not have been close with Ronnie Brown.
Absolutely. So.
Yes.
You know, it happens. But
we're
going to try not to ruminate on that too much because that'll just get sad.
I know. All right, what's next, young man?
Speaking of somebody from the 2002 to 2004 era, saw another tweet today from not from David Pollack, but including David Pollack.
Okay.
That I have a feeling is going to probably get some Georgia fans upset. So I'm going to ask you: is the constant criticism from UGA fans of David Pollack, is that fair?
I don't know. It's listen. That's the thing. When you're in the media spotlight, people are going to get on you, and especially if you go out and you know, if you're an opinionated guy, listen, I've had plenty of Georgia fans dislike me through the years and hopefully more like me than not, but I think the one thing is that you always have to be truthful and come from the heart. Now,
yes.
he's a national broadcaster. The one thing, and I get it, I thought in 2012 – when he picked Alabama over Georgia, and that was a game when it was about even. It's like, come on, you gotta, you know, it wouldn't have been like in the 15 game. I knew
sure.
we were gonna lose that one, but for the 2012 game, kind of go with Georgia. And I know that upset some Georgia fans there. So, you know, he's very good on TV.
He is,
and he's one of the greatest players in school history.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was a great, great, great player here at Georgia.
He was. He deserves a lot of credit and a lot of leeway, I would even say.
Yeah, but as far as, you know, hey, his opinion, it's just like anybody else's. And, he's very educated on it. And obviously he's seeing things a little bit differently from a national scope. And that he's on the road and is a lot more plugged in to different programs. And so that is good to kind of look at things is a national comparison when it comes to Georgia. I just think the big thing is right now for Georgia fans just to believe and really be hopeful that there are great days ahead with not only what's being done in recruiting, but what's expected of the players the work they're putting in, the diligence that they're putting in, the preparation that they're putting in. And I'm not promising it's going to happen this year. Might not happen next year, but in the very near future, I firmly believe, and I wouldn't say it if I didn't, I firmly believe that Georgia is going to be back amongst the elites of college football.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. And of course, when you get to that, you're going to get more national conversation. That's going to give more opportunity for someone like Pollock to talk about Georgia on the national stage.
That'd be great.
And the thing is, here's what I would tell people. I believe in the near future, in the same way, you're going to see Pollock being a little bit more lenient as far as talking about Georgia. Because he had to kind of get a profile of not being the Georgia homer.
Be a homer. I mean, yeah. On a much smaller level, like if we're calling a game and – if I'm like, for instance, I'm doing a Georgia and Auburn soccer game on August the 10th, I'm probably going to go out of my way, just almost second nature. You're going to go out of your way to talk as much about Auburn as possible because this is one of those broadcasts where you're down the middle.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if you're called, like when Dave and I are calling a baseball game, we're going to call the game and call it like we see it, but it's from a Georgia standpoint.
Certainly.
And that's where you have to be clear on things. And that's where, listen, there's no doubt we're for Georgia to win, but if the other guy's got a better team, we're going to say it. And
yeah.
And you have to have that because the bottom line, I heard a longtime, highly respected NFL front office man, Michael Lombardi, who I think is a great nephew of the legend. He said the key to success in football, you have to have honest evaluation of your own personnel.
Absolutely.
And that has always stuck with me. And let me tell you what, that can save a little bit of hair pulling. And that's why I knew going into last year. And unfortunately, and listen, it doesn't get fixed overnight because Coach Rick, the big Achilles was O-line and special teams, and we hadn't recruited well at wide receiver. But, you know, you looked at last year's team, it's like, well, you're going with a freshman or a transfer quarterback. You know, you got injuries at running back, huge questions at wide receiver, huge questions on the O-line. You know, that defense lost those three seniors, lost six of the front seven starters, and the special teams was up in there. So Could Georgia have a good year and be good enough? Yes, but they're major question marks. There was nobody, you know, we have, I think, the first, second, and third team all SEC. There were two players. That's not the MO for a championship team. So
no.
Now I think when you look at it and you say, okay, we're still not sure, but we're more settled at quarterback. Feel great at tailback and tight end, and then you hope that the O-line and wide receiver is better. You feel really good about the defense, and you hope that the special teams is better. And then what you're really hoping for is that in 2018, we're sitting here 365 days from now, you say, okay, we're good at all these spots.
Yes, absolutely.
That special teams is finally there. The O-line is finally there. Receiver is finally there. You know, we've got it shaved down to our top three, four guys, and hopefully at tailback, you know, with Swift, with Harry, and with Zamir White coming in, that's a spot where Georgia's just reloaded. Same with the defense.
Certainly. To your point about baseball, I was fortunate enough to be at the last game at Turner Field, and John Smoltz spoke in kind of the closing ceremonies, and he said, I just found out recently that I'm going to get to be on the World Series broadcast for the next several years, and I'm hoping that the Braves are going to be up there, and if they do, listen, I'm going to have to call the game neutral, but you know where my heart's going to be. I'm going to want to see this team win. I thought that was a really cool statement
to make. Absolutely, for sure.
Next question I want to ask you here. Saw recently that Steven Spielberg's classic, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, is going to be re-released in theaters this fall.
It's funny. That was on one of the movie channels the other day.
If you could re-release a favorite film of yours to theater, what would it be? Something that you would love to get to see in theater again.
And nothing, not changing anything.
No. You're just a straight re-release.
Boy, all right, so I'm running my head through Bond, Star Wars, Casablanca, Godfather, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Oh, man. Because I saw all the re-releases of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I might have to go with Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ooh,
just to get back in the theater. Because, I mean, when you're in the theater, that opening scene, when that big boulder's coming down, and it's like, we got something here.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool. One for me, I would have to say, is probably Back to the Future. I would love to get to see Back to the Future on the big screen again.
You and my better half, those are her favorite
movies. They're great.
They're great movies. Definitely, you know, right there when you're talking about Star Wars and Ghostbusters and
or
Vacation.
Yeah.
I mean, just iconic Ferris Bueller, iconic 80s.
Yeah.
Back to the Future.
My answer would have been Friday the 13th, except for the fact that I actually got to see that on the big screen a few years ago in a limited thing, which was a lot of fun to do. But
Bram and I went through this the other day. We were talking about like great movie villains, like Major Strausser from Casablanca, Darth Vader, who I think is the greatest movie character of all time. You know, certainly Hannibal Lecter there. But when it comes to movie villains, some of the great ones are in comedies, like Judge Smells, Dean Vernon Wormer, and without a doubt, Biff from Back to the Future is a great villain.
Awesome.
Butthead.
Villain.
What a jerk.
Oh, great villain. Biff. And a great guy. The actor Biff. Tom Wilson is a really cool guy when you kind of start getting to look at him outside of that movie. But absolutely a great character.
Real quick, the great Mike Mobley just tweeted in, said today, because it did come out in 1980, was the release date some 37 years ago of my favorite comedy ever, Caddyshack.
Very cool. There was another big release date that was on this day. I can't remember what it was. I'll have to go look that up in a little bit. Next question I got for you, moving back into sports here. It was about this time yesterday, of course, that the Braves announced they were trading Jaime Garcia and Anthony Recker for a pitching prospect from the Twins, whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce again.
It's got a lot of syllables in there.
Yeah, it was a train wreck when I tried to do that yesterday. But I got to ask you, bringing in another pitching prospect for the Braves, is it possible to have too many farm league prospects in Major League Baseball, and especially specifically talking about pitchers?
No, I don't think you can have enough arms. And I guess the Braves are the prime example of that, because you think back, it wasn't that long ago when it looked like Alex Wood was going to be like their number six starter. And then he was one of their best starters, and then they stupidly let him get away. But you think when they had – fill in some blanks here. Medlin, Beachy.
Oh, Beachy.
I mean, just so many good young. And even going back to when they
before Hudson got hurt.
Yeah, when they had Tommy Hansen, they had just had all these young. And Jair Jurgens was like borderline going to start the All-Star game. I don't know if he ever won another game.
Yeah.
So I don't think you ever have enough arms. Can't have enough linemen. Yeah. Oh, by the way, thanks to my buddy Rob Sherrill for tweeting in. The major detective from Inglourious Basterds, deliciously evil.
Oh, Hans Landa, Colonel Hans Landa.
Fantastic.
Yeah, one of the best modern film villains, I would have to say there. I mean,
no,
ignoring
he's in the top
characters
five.
Like Darth Vader, who have been around for a while.
Yeah, when I saw that he was going to play Ernst Stavlo Blofeld, I was like, that's perfect. And we were talking about villains, too. Brahm and I even said, it's like, you got to do the Bond villains a whole different category.
Right. And a lot of people, I'll kind of an unpopular opinion, a lot of people gave Spectre a lot of crap for not being a good movie.
Really
I thought
good.
It was great.
I
thought it was
too.
Wonderful. So I've never really understood all the hatred for that one.
And I'm a Bond guy.
Yeah. The question a lot of people have, though, talking about the pitching prospects, is that you're getting to the point with the Braves where they're having to make a lot of decisions now on which of these prospects they're going to promote, who's on the trade block. And something that we talk about with the NFL draft especially is when you start getting to that paralysis by analysis.
Right.
How many different metrics are you going to look at to decide – which prospects are we keeping? Which prospects are we getting rid of? There's just a lot of conversations there that you worry about just being paralytic almost.
Well, here's the problem that you want to have, okay? You got so many guys, it's like, all right, well, who do we deal? But then what you also don't want to have, and I think back to when, and here's how the Braves got great, when they made that early run in the 90s, they had that next wave of stars in Greenville with Javi Lopez, Chipper Jones, Mark Wohlers, Andrew Jones. So those and Ryan Klesko. Mm-hmm. So those were five guys like, we're not touching any of them.
Right.
That's where you hope that you've got the great players that there's no way we're going to move them. So kind of, I guess back to the root of your question, you never have enough arms, but at the same time, would you rather have five or six really elite prospects or 12 or 13 guys who you might think are pretty good? Because the Braves, they have been, and again, going back to when Alex was in Atlanta, and they had all those younger, and again, Medlin and Beachy just stand out to me. And then even when they had Venters in the bullpen and O'Flaherty, all these guys just wound up having the Tommy John surgeries there. They've kind of gone through a reboot here two or three times with the young pitching, and I know now they'll feel a little bit of extra pressure with a new ballpark, but one of the things that's hit them, and listen, admittedly, probably 90% of our listening audience, and I know Adam knows more about the Braves than I do, but one of the things, and Brain brought this up, when you look at that lineup, now Freeman's in his prime, he's a great player. I know there's a lot of hope for Swanson there, but it's not like you're looking at that lineup and that pitching staff going, oh my gosh, it's just littered with young guys. Because I can tell you, the year before they won their first division in the 90s, in 1990, I went to a ton of Braves games. I was in high school going into my senior year, and you could see now, I thought it was going to be 92, 93 when it hit, but it's like, oh my gosh, Glavin, Smoltz, Avery, Pete Smith, like they've got some really good young arms here. Like these guys are going to be really good. Yeah, they were taking their lumps in, and they had Ron Gant and David Justice, you know, Dion. It's like they got some guys who can hit, and I can just remember thinking, now, again, I'm not saying when I was 17 years old I picked them to win the division the next year, but say, I'm telling you what, this team in a couple of years, they're going to be really, really good. Well, the unique thing that happened, it's very rare when you got a lot of young players that they all hit at the same time. That's how you go from worst to first.
Certainly.
So Avery, Glavin, Smoltz, Gant, Justice, all those guys hit it once. And then those free agents, Pendleton was brought in for defense. He was MVP. He hit great. And Sid Bream and Belliard. So it really all came together at the same time. That's a really rare thing. I look at this Atlanta team, and granted, I just – don't follow them because I'm in the Georgia baseball vortex. And again, once that's done, it's been kind of tough to
get excited
about them because of where they're sitting. But it's not like this team is loaded with young talent like that. Maybe there's some very good talent in the minors. Maybe Swanson will turn out to be a really good player. But it's not like, in my opinion, you can differ with me, that you're looking at this team going like, oh yeah, in a year or two, they're going to be a juggernaut.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's really saying the Braves are going to be a juggernaut in a year or two, but there's a lot of promising young talent in the farm system. I mean, the Braves have been consistently rated as one of the top three farm programs in the last several years. So there are signs of hope, and you see the way that the team is obviously playing better right now than they have been in the past. I think a couple weeks ago I saw, and I can't remember the exact number, that the Braves had won – they have the most last at-bat wins in the major leagues right now. And that's something that this team a few years ago, you were not going to see.
No.
They're not the winningest team in the leagues right now because, you know, you've had some games just get out of hand.
That shows some heart, but it also shows, you know, you've had some good fortune there as well.
True.
That stuff
True.
Tends to even out.
It
yeah.
does. But so I don't know. There are signs of hope, but no, I think you're right. You're not looking at a juggernaut in the next couple of years, but you are looking at a franchise that's going to be better and is going to keep improving. My concern about the major league program right now is that with all of this young talent, we're not plugging enough of it in to really reap the benefits of it in the future.
Yeah,
that's my concern.
No, I get you.
I got one last question I'm gonna throw at you. We'll probably have to address it later though because we're coming up close to the
end
here.
Okay, we'll get on a break. Okay.
What are the three greatest film trilogies of all time? I was reading an article the other day that had the top 25. I'm curious what your thoughts on that are, but we probably don't have time for that right now.
Well, even though three never should have been made, I'll just go with The Godfather 1 and 2, and then the package they did where they put it in chronological order, starting with 2 with the flashback segments from that. So I'm going to cheat and do that. Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
Okay. Well, never mind. We hit it.
Okay. Boom. That was easy.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.